Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Garden City, Michigan, and went to work for Dino's Pizza in 1972 as a delivery boy. In 1973, he went to work for a newly formed pizza operation, which he helped name Hungry Howie's. Today, he's the president of Hungry Howie's with its famous flavored crusts. His name, Steve Jackson, and we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Steve Jackson, president of Hungry Howie's. Steve, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start with your childhood and your parents?
Well, I look back on my childhood, and I grew up in Garden City, Michigan. My parents bought a home there. Actually, they built a home there in the 1957 range. It was a new growing community, and I was 2 years old at the time that we moved there, and I was an only child for the first 10 years of my life. And then within 3 or 4 short years, we went from 1 to 5 children in our family. So we grew up in this close-knit neighborhood that the lots were small, the families were close-knit. And just to give you an example of how close-knit that they are, my parents to this day, almost 50 years later, are still close with the neighbors they had back in Garden City, even though none of them still live there at this point in time. So being the oldest of 5 children, I had a responsibility to set an example. I had a responsibility to take charge, babysit, do what was ever necessary. You know how that older child syndrome is. And with that, in the Garden City area, My parents, my mother worked when I was very young, but when the family grew, she was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was a truck driver in the city of Detroit, and he was for 40 years until he retired. Very hardworking, very blue-collar ethic, hardworking, ethical people. And we grew up knowing our neighbors, playing baseball in the streets, and you know, our organizations, everything took place within 6 blocks of our house. Our schools, Boy Scouts, our church, and it was a close-knit community.
What values did you learn from your mom and your dad?
Well, hard work first. They are strong in their faith. We understood family. We understood what it took to run a household, from the chores that we had to do, to the yard work. We had that responsibility to our family first, and then outside of the family came next.
Where'd you go to college?
Well, I went to elementary school. I was raised Catholic and went to Catholic school through elementary. I graduated from Garden City East High School in 1972. And following that, I went to Eastern Michigan University because my dream was to be an elementary school teacher. I had a teacher in high school that was very instrumental to me and set a wonderful example. And I really wanted to, he was my mentor. I wanted to emulate him. His name was Carl Amon. And anybody that went to Garden City High School remembers Mr. Amon. In fact, about a year ago, I celebrated my 50th birthday, and my wife surprised me by bringing him in for my 50th birthday. He lives in Florida now. And it was a real exciting time to see him again. So I went off to Eastern Michigan University with the dream of becoming an elementary school teacher.
You worked for Dino's Pizza. What did you do?
Well, a guy by the name of Jim Hearn owned a Dino's 3 blocks from my parents' home. Those of you that have lived in the Detroit area a long time probably remember Dino's, because back in the 60s, they were one of the front-running pizza chains. maybe even bigger than Domino's or Little Caesars at the time. And I went to work at this Dino's as a delivery boy in 72, right out of high school. And the owner of that, that franchise at the time was Jim Hearn. And we just ran a very busy, profitable store, and Jim was successful.
How did you ever matriculate from wanting to be a school teacher to getting into this pizza business full-time?
Well, I delivered for Jim for a year or so, and then went on to Ford Motor Company, and I worked in the factory at Wayne Assembly. And along with going to college, I commuted to Eastern Michigan from Garden City, and I worked full-time in Ford Motor Company, and had this dream of becoming a teacher. Well, in the 70s, there really weren't a lot of teaching opportunities available. And I came to realize that if I was to achieve my dream, first off, there were no jobs available because teachers were getting pink slipped throughout the city. And secondly, I was going to take a 50% pay cut from what I was making in the factory at the time. So I was kind of at a crossroad. Jim owned this Dino's and made a decision to leave Dino's and venture on into other areas. And we continued to be friends. And the history lesson of Hungry Howie's kind of goes like this. Jim owned a small little hamburger shop on Telegraph Road in Taylor, Michigan. And it was called Tic Tacs. There were a number of them around the city, the little white porcelain buildings, similar to a White Castle or the Hunter House in Birmingham or Bates in Farmington. And at that time, the Clock and Nugget restaurants were pretty popular for breakfast. So Jim decided to double the size of this restaurant and take a go at it as a Tic Tac restaurant. Well, his basis was in the pizza business, and this Tic Tac restaurant just never took off. So all of a sudden, in one week, he makes the decision to say, I'm pulling out the fryers and I'm not going to grill eggs anymore. We're going to throw pizza ovens in there and we're going to make a go of the pizza business.
We're talking to Steve Jackson. When we come back, we'll ask him how the name Hungry Howie's came about. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Steve Jackson, who started delivering pizzas in 1972. Steve, how did this thing go from Tic Tacs to Hungry Howie's?
Well, I said earlier that Jim lost interest in the concept of the breakfast business and decided in a quick 1 week notice that he was going to put pizza ovens in there and go back into the pizza business that he had departed with Dino's previously. So we were still all friends. I was working at Ford Motor Company at the time and going to school, but we saw each other on a weekly basis. We had a group. When we worked for Jim at Dino's, a lot of my friends worked together too. So we had a close-knit little group. And Jim was about 10 or 12 years older than us. And, you know, we really looked up to him because he was a successful businessman in our eyes. So we continued to associate with him. And we were sitting around the table one day, and he made a decision to do this. And we thought, hey, that's great. You know, it's a business that everybody had helped him with, and some were still working for him. So that's how it started. He threw the pizza ovens in there, remodeled a couple of walls, changed the signs on the outside of the building, and he was back in the pizza business.
The name itself, Hungry Howie's.
Well, there's not a lot of magic to it, but the story goes like this. I was going to Eastern Michigan University, and on Cross Street, actually right down the street from the first Domino's ever opened, was the hot hangout on campus called Hungry Charlie's. And that's where everybody at Eastern Michigan hung out in the late 60s and early 70s. So how does that connect to Howie? Well, I had mentioned to you that Jim was about 12 years older than us. owned a couple of businesses, drove nice cars, had a new house out in Canton, Michigan, and we nicknamed him Howie. Well, you might wonder, Hearn, Howie, what's the connection? Well, that nickname, we thought, because Jim had all these worldly goods and was a successful businessman, we thought he was the Howard Hughes of our time. So we nicknamed him Howie. So sitting around the table, trying to come up with a name, Hungry Charlie's, Howie, there you have it, Hungry Howie's.
Your neighbor Gene Miller now calls you Howie. So.
You know, on a funny tidbit, no association of this, but my father's name is Howard. So you got to believe over the last 30 years, a lot of people have thought Hungry Howie's was because of my dad. Sorry, Dad.
A lot of people start businesses in their mom and pop businesses, mm-hmm. and they stay mom and pop. A very select few really grow, develop, and become corporate entities. You mentioned earlier that Dino's Pizza back in the 60s was bigger than Little Caesars and Domino's. And then those two just took off. The ones that go from mom and pop to corporations, Steve, what is it about them that transition?
Well, any business, the foundation of that business is people. And if anybody was a mom and pop business, we sure were. Jim opened that first store in 1973. As I mentioned, I was going to Eastern Michigan University, and in late 1975, 1976, I wasn't far off from graduation, and I made the decision that I didn't have a future in teaching. I didn't enjoy what I was doing. So with Jim, I opened up Hungry Howie's number 2, and that was in 1976. So we had two stores in 1976, and in those first 4 or 5 years, we had friends and relatives that were still part of this inner circle that wanted the American dream, and we opened about 10 or 12 stores in the first 5 years with friends and relatives. Still mom and pop. We had a cigarette box, our cigar box under there is the cash register, and our barometer for profitability was our checkbook. At the end of the month, if there was money in it, we were doing okay. So I kind of came to the realization in the late 70s and early 80s that franchising was going to be where to go. And Jim really wasn't interested in doing that, but after some persistent conversations, he kind of gave me the opportunity to say, why don't you just take it and see what you can do with it? So we met with attorneys, kind of cleaned up our act a little bit, and spent the next 2 or 3 years identifying the systems that we were going to have to develop throughout our organization. We had to standardize anything and everything that we could. And probably the first decision that we made to standardize was the conveyor pizza oven, because that was kind of the time it was just starting to evolve. Prior to that, we had the old deck ovens, and us old guys still have the scars to prove it from opening up and burning our arms on them. But these new conveyorized pizza ovens gave us the opportunity to set a pizza in one end and come out the other end, cook the same way every time. So that was kind of the start of it. Then we looked through every part of our business to try to make any change that we could. We had to develop an operations manual. We knew how to make the products. We knew how to assemble things, but we had to develop a system that we could teach other people to do it. And it would have to be done in an organized fashion. We had to standardize not only product, we had to standardize marketing, we had to standardize accounting. We had to learn how to collectively put our marketing dollars together to be able to advertise on the radio. So any of those factions of the business, if you had a weak link, you weren't going to get to the next level. And we had to be open to all new ideas. The pizza business in the last 25 years has changed radically from the technology, the computers, the products, the way they're assembled. When I think back in those days, we literally sliced our own pepperoni and diced our own cheese and did everything to assemble that product. And there's no way that we could take it to the next level relying on the manpower and the labor and the possibility of human error at that level. So we just continued to work in that area. We're continuing to work at it today, Jack. I mean, we are a national corporation, but we always have to be open to new technology. And by doing so, today the computer systems, the surveillance cameras, the internet, corporate email, all the things in business, when you take us little pizza guys from 25 years ago, that's what's getting us to the next level.
Another thing you had to learn to do was delegate. Mm. Very hard for an entrepreneur to do.
It really is.
How did you do it?
Well, delegation, I believe, starts real early in life. And I think with that, you're somewhat on the receiving end. Because as you're growing up, your school days, your athletics, your sports, your activities, you're learning. You're being delegated to. The chores that you're giving as a child, you're learning. And by doing so, that makes you a better delegator when you're older. And as you go into marriage, it's a give and take situation. You have to delegate with your spouse. As you become a parent, you have to delegate to your children. So it's a learning process that I think starts when you're real young. And those of the people that are good delegators, I think firmly one of the number one qualities is you have to be a good listener.
I'm Jack Krasula. We're talking to Steve Jackson. And this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're with Steve Jackson, president of Hungry Howie's, and Pizza Today in 2004 named you as the chain of the year.
Very proud moment for our company.
Every entity, a band, a sports team, a company, a church has a culture. What's a culture?
When you start with one location in a business and you evolve it over 30 years, your culture evolves. What was important to you then maybe intensifies in certain areas more importantly than they did when you first started. Our culture starts basically with ethics, fairness, and it has to emulate throughout the complete organization.
It's easy to have a culture when you're very tiny. Steve, as you get bigger and bigger, you've now got 8,000 people with you. Mm-hmm. How do you propagate that culture throughout all these states with thousands of people?
That's a scary number, isn't it? It's hard for me to even grasp that we have 8,000 people in our ranks, but you're absolutely right, Jack. Because we're a product and service-based business, our culture has to begin with just that. We have to execute both of those consistently. So it begins with training. When we evaluate franchisees to come into our organization, franchising is an interesting business. When you begin franchising in the early days, I think you're somewhat impressed that someone wants to buy a franchise from you, so you sell a franchise to anybody that has a pulse and a checkbook. Well, then you understand over time that that person has to have the culture and the exact same values that you have in your business. And we've identified that. And when we pass that along, it begins right with the first meeting, and it continues throughout our training process. And then each and every year through our national meetings and our field representatives, it passes down through all levels of communication.
When we come back, we'll ask Steve about what's a leader, how do you find leaders, and how do you keep leaders? I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Steve Jackson of Hungry Howie's, which today has 520 outlets in 17 states. Steve, talk to us about leaders.
Well, in our organization, if I look back over the 30 years of growth, I had mentioned to you earlier that we grew in the first 5 years with friends and relatives. And then when we set the foundation for franchising and we began to put the keys together to take it to the next level, we started with just myself in a one-room office in Plymouth, Michigan. We sold a couple of franchises. We trained the people with the store managers that we had. And over these last 25 years, our growth has just kind of been staged in a way that we have just grown as needed. So as far as finding leaders, I think when I look back the way that our company's been developed, we have developed leaders. My core of key people, most of them have been on board for 10 to almost 20 years. And when I look back in 1983, we awarded our first franchise. At that point in time, Jim Hearn made a decision to move to Florida. So Jim went to Florida and started planting seeds down in Florida in the early 80s. And a step that we needed to do to consistently operate our business was get into the distribution business so that we could standardize our products. So we identified an individual that was a leader, and he was able to form that part of our business for us. In 1986, we opened up that first office, had three people in the office. We had a warehouse manager, and we literally scrambled trying to load trucks to get them out each and every week. And we grew from there. We started with a 1,000-square-foot office. We sold a few franchises, made the decision that I needed to hire someone to go out in the field and visit these stores. So throughout the pizza industry, I found an individual by the name of Jeff Rinke. And Jeff came on board as our first franchise representative. He had previous experience in the pizza business with another chain and walked in and hit the ground running. And today, Jeff started as that rep in the middle to late 80s, and today's the vice president of marketing and development for us. So he's grown over that time. That's how we've developed leaders, as they've come on board and we've needed to add a position. We look internally first, because that's what's really going to help your business grow, is if people coming on board realize that they have an opportunity. And if you're constantly going outside for that opportunity, you're not going to foster the work ethic within the organization. So for many, many years, we'd develop a new position and we'd appoint somebody internally to run that part of the business. And it's been successful for us.
We mentioned earlier that Pizza Today named you the chain of the year in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get to the top. It's even harder to stay at the top. Ross Perot once said that it's a strange thing about Americans. Very often, when they get successful, they quit doing the very thing that made them successful. How do you keep your team at the top?
Well, Jack, when we received that phone call in early 2004 from the editor of Pizza Today magazine, we were somewhat stunned, because the previous year in 2003, Domino's won it. Big, big worldwide organization. So I guess we didn't put ourselves in the caliber of contention. So when they went through the interview process, and in April of 2004, the announcement was made, we felt like we won the Academy Award of the pizza business. Did we do things differently after that? Absolutely not. We continued to execute exactly the same way that we do each and every day. When I look at growth, the key words that are important to us, and they always have been, is conservative, manageable growth. I've read the stories over the years of the companies that grew too fast and they couldn't manage that. So did we get to the top? Are we at the top? That award put us there at that point in time. What defines the top? We're not the number one pizza chain in the category. Is that the top? Maybe. At this point, when we look at growth, I gave a speech at our franchise convention back about a month ago, and I told our franchisees a quote that Jim Sullivan, a restaurant critic, made. And all it said was, worry about being better, and bigger will take care of itself. So that's all I want each and every facet of our business to do, is be better than you've been, and the growth will continue.
They say that success is a journey, not a destination. What does that mean to you?
Well, I heard that statement actually years ago at a convention. I remember hearing it. Herman Cain, who actually ended up being the president of the National Restaurant Association, made that statement, and that's the first time I had heard it. And I agree wholeheartedly. Are we successful? I suppose by some terms and definitions we are. But are we as successful as we can be? Maybe, maybe not. That's a personal achievement, and I think that each person has to define that for themselves. Our business is a success, but each year we want to be a little bit better, and it is a journey. It's a journey that makes you pay attention to every single part of your business. And without watching that and without managing that, if you have a weak link, it's going to affect that journey.
In today's business world, can you be ethical and fair and also be successful and profitable?
Well, I mentioned earlier, as far as culture, you know, ethics and fairness, I believe, is a foundation of culture. I'm not sure you'll be successful if you're not. And we've always looked at every part of our business, from our relationships with our franchisees to our employees, to our vendors and suppliers. It has to be fair. It has to be a win-win relationship with everyone. And every decision that we make throughout our business day, ethics and fairness, I think, come into play. And we've fostered that throughout our organization.
You met Sarah when you were 20 and she was 19.
No, actually, Jack, I met her when she was 16 and I was 17. Oh. We got married when we were 20.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right. And today, you still work as a team.
That's right.
Mike and Marion Illich still today work as a team. What is it about the pizza business that seemed to be terrific for couples?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know if I'd associate it with that particular business. I think it has to define the relationship of the couple. We were very young when we met. We decided to get married early. We had children at a young age. I actually jumped in the pizza business at 21 years old. And at that point in time, we had a house. I had a job at Ford Motor Company. I was going to school at Eastern Michigan University. And I left college, and I left a well-paying job to open up Hungry Who? It was a big question at the time. And without the support of my wife, and her behind me all the way, it would have not been a success. And she's been behind me every day and every part of my life.
When you're at home, does she let you in the kitchen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's usually to do the dishes after we eat. She'll lay out the great meals, and I'll come in and help and get in her way or help clean up afterwards. But we're a good team. You know, we're a good team when it came to family. We're a good team. You know, when I look back and I had a store and I was managing a store and my kids were younger, she'd get a babysitter on those weekends and come in for 3-4 hours and answer the phones or make subs or do whatever it took. She's always been there to support in any way that she can.
We're talking to Steve Jackson, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Steve Jackson of Hungry Howie's. Steve, flavored crust. How did you ever conceive that?
Well, Jack, being in business in Detroit, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it's considered somewhat the pizza capital of the United States because of the fact that three of the top chains grew up here. The first, Domino's, Little Caesars, and Hungry Howie's, all within 20 miles of each other. And everybody kind of picked their niche back at the time that they started their businesses. Well, when we grew, we were kind of trying to be a little bit of everything, and we really hadn't identified a niche. And one day, when listening to some of our franchisees in the early 80s, one came to me and was playing with the idea of flavoring the crust of the pizza with sesame seeds. So we went down and met with him, and he did it, and we thought, well, that's kind of interesting. He said, well, I kind of want to try it in my store. Well, back to that goal of consistency, we don't want this store doing one thing and another store doing another, so we had to really identify and realize what was important at that time, but we thought there was enough merit with this concept, so we gave him permission to do that. And it had a great appeal. So we rolled it out into a few more stores, and we sat down and brainstormed and thought, maybe we can do more than just these sesame seeds. So we came up with 8 different flavors. From butter cheese, we butter the crust of the pizza, we put poppy seeds, we put garlic, put rye, we've even expanded it to Cajun. And we expanded this into a few more stores, and it really kind of took off like wildfire. So in 1985, we had about 50 locations at the time, and we made the decision that this was going to be our signature. So we agreed throughout the chain, and we rolled and executed flavored crust pizza.
You started as a delivery boy, the American dream. Mm-hmm. Is the American dream still alive today?
I really believe that it is. I see it happen with our organization on a regular basis. When you look out in the worldwide landscape of business, you see the Googles and the Bill Gates and the Amazon.coms that you really weren't familiar with 10, 20 years ago that have become massive businesses because of hard work and people. I look through our organization, and I'll give you an example of the American dream. 1980, Sarah and I moved into Canton, Michigan. And we had about those dozen stores at the time. And 3 houses down the street was a family that became very close to us. And they had a 10-year-old boy. And the day we were moving into our home, my wife was standing out in front of the house and felt something hit her in the side of the head. And she didn't know what it was, and later found out that a BB gun ricocheted and hit her in the side of the head. Now you're sitting there wondering, where is he going with the American dream? What ended up happening from that initial meeting, this little 10-year-old boy, 3 doors down, was playing with his BB gun and accidentally shot a BB into a sign and hit my wife. My wife was pregnant at the time. A few months later, ended up delivering my son. This boy, Jerry Heath, ended up being a big brother to my son. Jerry had 2 older sisters. My son Steve had 2 older sisters. Well, Jerry stayed close with our family and got out of high school, didn't know what he wanted to do, wanted to maybe get into the pizza business, and throughout a process of about 5 years, he kept in touch with my wife, and she said, Jerry, go to college, get a degree. Then he came back and she said, you need to work in the stores. And he did. And then she said, now you're going to have to figure out a way to round up some money. And he teamed up with his dad. And his dad took his retirement money and opened up One Hungry Howie's. Today, Jerry's about 35 years old and he has 11 stores. Is that the American dream? It's happened throughout our organization continually. I can look at people within our organization, the multi-store operators, that literally started with nothing, and through hard work, ethics, fairness, they fulfilled the American dream.
If he ever asked you to go hunting, you probably wouldn't go hunting with him.
In 2003, he was the franchisee of the year for our company. And we're very proud of that. We're very proud of a number of people in our organization. I could list names of people that are millionaires today because of the business, the concept, but because of their hard work. So you can fulfill the American dream in any business if you identify the skills and you work hard.
And you find something you love.
Find something you love.
The role that faith plays in your life.
Well, faith, I believe, is a basic foundation in my life. I was raised Catholic. My parents were spiritual people. We went to church. I went to Catholic elementary school. I was an altar boy. We were involved in our church. Back in junior high school, attended vocation camps and with the Pi missionaries and went to summer camps. And actually in junior high, Jack, my goal was to be a priest. Well, I met girls after that and kind of changed my thoughts on being a priest. But faith has always been a part of my life. If it wasn't for the basis of my faith, I would have never met my wife. Because our fathers belonged to a Catholic organization, the Knights of Columbus, we both attended a teen dance. We didn't grow up in the same neighborhood. We attended a teen Christmas dance, and that's where I met my wife. Without my faith, that maybe that wouldn't have happened. We've raised our children with the foundation of faith. My kids attended Catholic school their whole life, and we hope that they continue to spread their faith and make it a part of their lives. It's been a very basic foundation of our world. We've been involved in our church when the kids were younger. There were always activities that we were a part of. We've faith has been a community in our life. It's been a way to meet a lot of people that have been friends for a lot of years, from priests to nuns, to my wife was a choir director for many, many years in the church. And being participating at that level gave her a lot of opportunity to share a talent in a community. And faith's about community.
What are you proudest of?
Well, there's probably a few things that I'm proud of, Jack. First off, I'm proud of my marriage and my family. You know, in the days that we live, the values of family and the focus of family, it's easy to quit. And when two people meet at 16, 17 years old and make a decision to commit themselves and have been a part of each other's lives for 35 years, were there times that you wanted to quit? Absolutely. But I'm proud of the fact that we've really worked hard to have a strong marriage and a strong family. I'm proud of my business. I'm proud of being part of an organization, and I mean part, because the people in our business have built that business. But we have an organization that literally benefits thousands of people. You said we have 8,000 employees? That's right. We have thousands of customers that depend on us. And that's a satisfying achievement, to be able to continue to build a business that benefits a lot of people.
What are your dreams?
Well, maintain good health, maintain a happy family, and continue to have manageable conservative growth within our business.
Steve Jackson, you're one of the most grounded, successful people I've ever met.
Thanks, Jack.
Take my hat off to you. Our guest next week will be George Blaha, the voice of MSU football and Pistons basketball. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spohom.